Welcome to our Contract Trust conference call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We're not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Well, here we are again. Another 2 weeks gone by, and, you know, here we are again. Anyway, thank you for joining us. We appear to be so close to this RV actually occurring that Jim and I decided to switch gears a little bit and talk more about getting to know the contract trust and how to operate it. All of our clients have access to our exceptional website, which has a plethora of information for your use. Included in that information are 5 booklets that my husband Jay and I wrote in 1998. We felt that if we created this powerful asset protection for our clients, we had to teach them how to use it. Our book number 4 is titled How to Operate and Use a Contract Trust Organization, a Procedures Guide. We would like to discuss that today. So please feel free to write down any questions that you have and press star 6 on your phone to raise your hand. Let me see if Jim's here yet. There he is. Good morning,
Hello.
Jim.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Good. All right. Well, why don't we get started here? So title and ownership to property may be held in many different ways in the United States by individuals, trusts, or other agencies of commerce. Since most people acquire their assets over a long period of time, ownership is quite often as varied as the property. The nature of ownership you have to your property or how you hold title to it is a determining factor of how it will pass from you to your heirs. If the property owner holds the title the wrong way, the ultimate disposition of the assets and the tax consequences may cause the estate plan to fall far short of accomplishing its objectives. It really is a mouthful, isn't it? As denarians and currency holders, we all have a common interest. We are expecting a windfall and wish to protect it from anyone who might want us to part with it and make sure our family doesn't suffer from an estate tax haircut. That's where the contract trust comes in. If an unincorporated trust organization has ownership and title to assets, then eventual death would not affect the ownership and title of the assets. This legal entity is the common law contract trust, which would be controlled and utilized by the family members for as long as you desired. You can die as a pauper with your family's blessing because they get the maximum benefits from your estate, which was intended for their enjoyment and welfare. If there are any particular benefits resulting from keeping the ownership and title to assets in your own name, we failed to discover them in the course of our research. The only need relating to property in this life is the control and use of that property. That control can be accomplished through the contract trust using simple operational procedures and relationships. The family members will need to learn to assume different roles from that of individuals concerning financial matters. Instead of signing checks or other instruments as an individual, the family member who is part of the trust may be signing the same name as trustee of this trust organization. These new rules are not difficult to learn. The following suggestions are intended to familiarize the trustees and other trust organization members with the basic concepts and principles of operating a contract trust. One of the goals in using a trust is privacy. So we suggest that you choose a name that means something to you, but not one that others will associate with you. That's why we discourage you from using your surname or a name similar to a business you may have or have had. You must remember at all times that the contract trust organization you are accepting is not your trust. It owns itself. It's an entity unto itself. You are the trustees only. When it is necessary to discuss the contract trust, simply say you are the trustee, manager, president, treasurer, etc. of that contract trust, responsible only for managing the assets of the trust organization. The trust indenture itself is a contract binding the parties involved to that contract agreement. The trustees possess legal and equitable title to the contract trust assets and are obligated to manage those assets as if they own the assets in their own name. This means, more than likely, that the trustee will apply the same rules in the conduct of trust organization business as he or she did when he or she owned the property outright. It is important to keep in mind the fact that the contract trust, like any individual, is due absolute privacy. Therefore, none of the activity of the contract trust through the trustee should be made public. The trustees will never be under the direction of anyone or anything other than the trust indenture and the minutes of the contract trust. Again, you know, one of the many benefits of the trust is the privacy it provides. We strongly suggest that you should protect your privacy by using a mailing address other than your residence, and we've talked about this many times. Use a private mailbox is a good, inexpensive solution. Even if your state, say you live in Florida or Texas or Washington or any of those states that do not have taxes, we still suggest you get a mailbox other than your residence. Unlike a corporation or LLC, the contract trust need not be registered in your state unless you're conducting business. Because it is not recorded, we don't need to check for name availability when requesting the EIN. 99.9% of the names that are chosen are okay. You know, once in a while we'll get one that's really, really common, and the IRS will kick it out. But most of the time, they're just fine. As currency holders, we all expect to be working with a host of professionals to help us manage the assets of the trust. These professionals must be familiar with contract trust and the rules and regulations applicable to the contract trust in general. They must therefore apply themselves to a study of those rules and regulations applicable to the contract trust before they can do justice to the contract trust operation. They will have to do their homework. Be advised that most professionals are not interested in learning anything new, but if they want your business, and they will have to learn it. No one attacking the contract trust with intent to distort it in any way can be successful if it is properly represented. And folks, from what we're hearing, we are going to be returning to a common law system. Our trust is already common law. All the attorneys and judges are all going to have to be relearn common law anyway. So you should not have any kind of problem whatsoever with that on that aspect. So Jim, it feels like I've been jabbering for a long time. Even it's only been a few minutes. Would you like to take over for a few?
Sure. Do we have any questions popping up yet, though, just in case?
No, we do not. Nope.
All right. Fine. Let me take over.
Okay.
The contract trust was set up to protect your property. Some will claim that you and the contract trust are the same person. This happens when someone claims that you, as trustee, are liable for actions of the contract trust organization. The same is claimed when you, as trustee, are blamed for actions of the contract trust organization. Oh, we have two sentences the same.
Hmm.
Trustees are not personally liable on contracts they signed as trustee for the contract trust. You must be sure to properly sign everything, acting strictly in the capacity of the trustee and not as otherwise. We've talked about that quite a bit lately, about putting a limiter. So I would sign Jim Knox, trustee and not as otherwise. However, there are ways in which other person can attach trust assets. For example, if you commingle your property or personal funds with trust property or funds, you may void the trust. In other words, if it cannot be determined whether you or the contract trust is the owner of the property, then the court can declare that the trust is your alter ego, which is the same person, and the trust veil can be pierced. As in most situations, there's a right way and a wrong way to establish the trust. Hello, Jay. How are you today? I hear Jay in the background. Oh, well. As I was saying, as in most situations, there's a right way and a wrong way to establish the trust. Most of you are all aware that we use a third-party creator to initiate the trust. Note that I said third-party. You cannot be the creator of the trust you wish to create. The creator has only two functions. A, he or she trades the contract trust certificate units for property of the investor, which is you, and B, he or she appoints the first trustee. This ensures that the relationship between the creator, investor, and trustee will be kept at arm's length and in an ordinary course of business. Property is held in joint tenancy by the trustees for the contract trust and not as tenants in common. This prevents the possibility that the property could be divided or one person could withdraw the portion to which he holds title, thereby destroying the contract trust, making it a partnership under the law and rendering it taxable as such. It also establishes that property held for the trust will be exclusively used to the benefit of the contract trust. property is conveyed into the trust, it is documented on Schedule A, which lists the types of currency you wish to put into the trust. We do not list the amounts or perceived value. This ensures there is no recognizable capital gains. Over the years, we have found that it generally takes $100 to open a bank account, so we add the statement $100 and other cash deposits. Schedule A is initialized by the creator and the investors. Easy for me to say.
Right.
Schedule B lists the names of the contract trust certificate unit holders and the number held. This page is also initialed. Schedules may vary for secondary trusts. If you choose to put the trust into a safety deposit box, make sure it is in the name of the trust. Since the trust organization does not die, the safety deposit box will be available to the successor trustee without impound. I'd like to make a comment about that. We're supposed to be going into a whole new type of banking system. In the present form of the banking system, I have found that I cannot trust the banks to keep privacy amongst their box holders. They went into my safety deposit box and knew what I had in it. If anybody wants to know the details of that, let me know. So, in my opinion, keep it away from the bank. I just purchased a very large fireproof file cabinet. It's got a 4-hour fire rating. It's not inexpensive, but everything's going to go in that. And the only two keys made, I'll have a key, and my successor trustee will have a key, just as a commentary.
And there are also safety deposit organizations that are not part of a bank, but all they do is just a block of safety deposit boxes, and they're generally available for rent as well.
Right. We had one down in Reno. We
yeah.
played there. Okay. Oh, that was a Las Vegas one. Okay. So, we do not provide trust for property other than currency.
We do. Excuse me.
Excuse me. We do. Yes, we do. I say do not.
Yes, you did.
All right. I need stronger coffee. That's all there is to it. Book 4 suggests the right and wrong way to convey property, stocks, securities, and other title property. We have spoken with many of you who wish to put your houses and even cars into the Mother-Lode Trust. We highly recommend against this practice. Real estate and vehicles are potentially the highest liability items. Putting them in the same basket as the currency or the money puts everything at risk. Do we have any comments or questions yet?
No, we had a question. It went away. Let me get... see if I can find him back. Let's see. Where did he go? There he is. No. Okay, there he is. Hi, McKinley. How are you doing today?
Oh. Okay. Hello.
Hey, McKinley.
How you doing? I'm having a problem keeping up with you because I don't really know where you started. You just kind of took off. Well, it wasn't you first. First it was Carol, and then you. You came in, so I'm trying to follow you. But you said something at the end about putting the home and the automobiles in the same trust or not to?
Not to.
Not to.
Not to, okay.
Yeah. It's a never, 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 ever do that situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
well,
everything.
Okay. Hold on just a second, McKinley. We're on
go ahead. Go ahead.
If you've been able to open up, it's on the website. We're just kind of grazing through that. This isn't verbatim out
okay.
of the book.
Okay. Okay. I'm on the website.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know where the
all
books
right.
are at.
Yes.
Okay.
You said book 4, right? Book 4.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's one we're in.
Okay.
So this call is about an overview of that book, because that's what this is all about. But
okay.
the book is excellent. I've got it open my other screen, and I'm glancing at it as Carol is reading, and it follows along really well.
Okay.
So, okay, now the rest of your question, McKinley.
That, as far as this goes, that's all. I'll catch you at the end when you're done with this.
Okay.
All right.
All right. And we got one more.
Perfect.
Hi, Danny. How are you doing? Danny? Are you code 410? Please unmute yourself. There he is.
Oh, yes. What page are you on, Tim? Just bouncing around?
Well, yeah, what we've done, Danny, by the way, hi.
Hi.
We're just kind of I guess what we did is Carol's went through the book, and we're just highlighting the aspects of the book. We're not going verbatim.
Yes.
So we're just going to talk about, you know, what's in the book for those that don't have the book or not don't have it available to them right now. And, of course, there'll be people listening to this recording later.
Sure.
So we want to give an overview of what Book 4 has. And then, of course, we've got multiple books in there. And,
sure.
So you have a specific question?
Yes. So if I have a house and it's not in the trust and I create a real estate trust, and then I got to go through a process of putting that house in title, so I have to take and go down to the courthouse, and I have then to do some paperwork, right, to take and change the title on my recorded deed or mortgage, et cetera, am I about right?
You're about right. We do most of that for you. We send you the information and all the forms. All you have to do is pretty much sign it, take it down there, and record it.
But you do have to walk down, go to the guard keep, and file it over the counter with some clerk, correct?
Yeah, you got to almost strip naked to get in the courthouse now.
Yeah.
How that goes.
Yeah, or hire an escrow agent.
Yeah, that's even a better idea.
Okay, then you go to their office, and then they take the paperwork, and then they process the same thing.
Right.
But either way, it's got to be publicly recorded as record.
So oh, absolutely.
So it's congruent, consistent, right? So everything
right.
The T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. Okay, thanks.
All right, let's get back on track here. The contract trust is set up to protect your family's assets. It is important that the family knows about the trust and its operation. One day, your children will succeed you as trustee, so it's a good idea to educate them as you operate the contract trust. Now, I know there are some speakers out there who are suggesting, wisely so, to keep this as quiet as possible. I do not recommend keeping this RV from your spouse. It's not a good idea. And even when you do get your children involved, they don't have to know how much money is involved. Just tell them, you know, whatever you want to tell them. You don't want to tell them anything that's going to possibly jeopardize your NDA, if there is one. But they should be made aware that circumstances are a little different. You know, if you start buying new houses, new cars, they're going to realize circumstances are a little different. But I strongly suggest that husband and wife participate jointly in the operation of the trust. You know, as trustees, your decisions must be unanimous. You both need to become thoroughly familiar with the contract trust activities and your responsibility to maintain it. And if the husband, I'm just thinking about this, if the husband takes over operation of the trust, the wife may be left unaware of the importance of the trust and its operation, possibly placing the family estate in jeopardy upon the husband's death. You know, most couples name their children as successor trustees. They also need to become thoroughly familiar with the trust activities and their future responsibility to maintain it. If the children are minors, you will have to name an interim successor trustee to manage the trust until such time as the children are mature enough to handle it. We suggest naming the children to an advisory board of trustees, which gives them no power whatsoever, so they can gain valuable knowledge and experience in managing family activities. It just means that mom and dad are going to have a trust meeting and you're going to invite the kids to participate. That's an advisory trustee. Speaking of maturity, many of you wish to set up your kids with money gained from the RV, and some of these kids may be in their 30s or 40s. I dare say most of them will not be able to effectively manage the kind of money that may be involved. We have suggested, and we've all been working on this, some of us only for a few months, some of us for 10, 12 years. So we're kind of ingrained, okay, we're going to have this kind of money to deal with. If you suddenly give Junior $2 million, he's going to say, oh my God, what am I doing now? So we have suggested that if you want to give Junior $2 million, that you create and fund Junior Trust for him. He can be a trustee. Name yourself as executive trustee. He cannot do anything without you. When you feel he's gained the maturity and the knowledge necessary to manage that kind of money on his own, you can resign as executive trustee. I'm going to take a little break here. Any other questions right now? No, Jim, I don't see any hands up.
All right. Well, let's continue. Once a contract trust has been established, it's important to remember that all the business transactions are to be agreed upon and to be voted upon by the Board of Trustees. Then you must document all trust activity with minutes and have all the trustees sign and date the minutes. This action ensures that the contract trust is kept in force and all trust assets are protected and represent the authority or actions taken. Numbering all minutes consecutively and legibly creates an ever-ready reference. Be brief, but include all pertinent information. Be sure all of the trustees sign the minutes so the authority for your actions is recognized. Begin a minute with, at a regular meeting, with all trustees present, it was decided, or some similar wording. We have provided hundreds of sample minutes on our website for you to use, and I think we're up to about 300 right now. We're going to go to about 500 minutes. I've got some more I've been working on. You must write at least 1 minute annually. Your mother lode trust will more than likely be used to manage the bulk of the funds and probably not be making purchases. But you should record that you will be using the services of XXX Wealth Management Company or YYY Accounting Firm, etc. For your secondary trust, you may wish to document all transactions up to an amount of the trustees deemed prudent and responsible with a general minute, authorizing the transaction. For example, minute number blank, 123, whatever it may be, of ABC Associates Contract and Declaration of Trust. At a special meeting of the Board of Trustees, with all trustees present, it was suggested and unanimously agreed by the trustees, or document by minute, all purchases and or transactions exceeding $1,000 or whatever amount you want to choose. It is also agreed that all purchases and or transactions below that amount are hereby authorized by this minute number, whatever it is, and receipts from those transactions will be marked minute number, whatever it was, or stamped with the trustee seal accordingly. Date and sign it. This minute may be unnecessary if all purchases are made by check, credit card, or debit card held in the name of the contract trust. Carol?
Okay, we have a question here. Let's see. Area code 702? Area code 702-587. If you have muted yourself, please unmute.
Yes, my name is Maurice from Las Vegas. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm brand new.
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
Yes, I'm brand new to this to these calls. This is my first call, and I'm trying to access the information on your website, but it says I need an invitation code. How do I receive an invitation code?
Okay, we have a private website for our members only, and the only way you get to become a member is by a trust. So you can read that. You can read that public page, but for now, it's as far as you're going to get.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Danny, you have another question? Danny?
Yeah, I do, thanks. So, Carol, what's the very first minute one should put in their trust? A minute.
Well, we provide you with the first five or six, depending if you're single or married. It all depends. I mean, I like the idea of for secondary trust, what we just said about purchases, that's fine. But right now, let's just say you have a trust, you got a trust from us sometime this last year, and we are being next week. Praise God. We ERB next week, you're going to make some mention of that in the trust that according to blah, blah, you might even say you have an NDA and you can't talk about it, but you will want to document that you're working with XYZ management company or accounting firm or something like that. You just got to keep up on what you're doing. You want to make sure that when you pass away, you want to make sure that your successors read this and they can see what's happening or what you've done. And your reasons for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so maybe the first entry could be the establishment of the mail address, right?
Well, that's already done. You did that to begin with. You did that to get your EIN number.
Okay.
Let me jump in here real quick.
Okay.
So probably the first thing that you're going to put in the minute after, because you already got the trust. So, and we've done the first five or six, as Carol said. Next thing you're going to want to do is, okay, what's the next option you're going to do? What's the next activity that you plan on doing? Where you're probably going to go to the bank. You're probably going to try and do an exchange. You're probably going to do, then once you get the exchange done, you're going to want to get a wealth managing team in there. Each one of those has to have a minute saying what you're doing. That's all. It's just a really short three-sentence paragraph. You'll learn that you just put the header for the minute, the standard opening, which I read a minute ago, and then just a little bit of the body of what you're going to do, and then you do the closing part where you sign it. So those are all templated out on our website. Then all you got to do is figure out what the meat and potatoes is of this minute and to put it in there, and that's all you have to do. It's really, really simple. I've talked before about hold on a second. Excuse me. I've talked about this secretary's book that I have. I consider myself to be a secretary to the trustee, even though I'm the trustee. And so I write down everything I'm doing. And then once a month, I'll formalize that by putting in a minute and do an overview of what I did for the trust for that month. That's how I do it, because I have so many things going on, and I have so many trusts that I'm managing for so many different things. That's the only way I can do it. Does that kind of help a little bit?
Yes, yes, yes. It's getting familiar, free, and easy with that, like you're saying. And so it's good. Yeah,
yeah.
Appreciate it.
Okay, and I want to make one more comment. To the gentleman that asked about being able to get into the trust.
What?
At the end of this, we're going to give our phone numbers out. We always do. And my name is Jim, and you can call me, and we'll discuss this, and I'll help you make a decision if that's what you're looking for. And we'll send you some information about who we are, what we do, what we've done, how strong our documents are, and the fact they've been all the way to the top court in the United States and won against one of the major bureaucracies, shall we call them,
mm-hmm.
government. So, you know, just because you can't get in right now doesn't mean you can't get in soon. Just give me a call. I'll talk you through it. Okay.
All righty. So we've talked about the creator. Well, there's two jobs. First, to initiate the trust, and then to appoint the first trustee to administer and manage the contract trust. The creator then steps away. You, the first trustee, are then charged with naming additional or co-trustees who have equal duties, rights, and responsibilities as you. This co-trustee is generally a spouse. And by the way, I thought I had it on here, but when you are contemplating filling out your application, you cannot be your own creator. That has to be a third party.
We have it up above. I talked about that. So.
I knew it was there somewhere, okay. So anyway, the two of you, most likely you and your spouse, then name your successor trustees. Trustees.
Wait a minute. You cannot be your own successor trustee.
Well, I have that's at the end of this sentence.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
I walked away for a moment. So I must have missed the other part. The two of you then name your successor trustees. These trustees have no duties, rights, or responsibilities until some event, such as the death or absence of a trustee. When choosing a successor, your criteria should include that such person be trustworthy, willing, and capable of doing the job. You may choose as many successor trustees as you like. However, they have no rights as trustee until they succeed to the position of trustee. And I would also caution you on naming too many successor trustees. If you have five kids and you name them all as successor trustees, you may have a difficult time getting them to agree on something. So just something to toss around when you're deciding what you want to do here. You can specify that the successor trustees be of your bloodline or add a spendthrift trust. Spendthrift clause of no successor can hypothecate the assets of the trust for their own benefits. Now, you cannot be your own successor trustee, and you must name a successor trustee. Now, think about this. Successor means comes after. Somebody's going to take over the trust when you die, so you not name yourself. If you do, please let me know how you're going to manage that. As a convenience, the trustees may elect one or more executive trustees. He has the authority to act for and on behalf of all the other trustees. Okay, looks like Danny, are you back here? I can't tell. No, you're not there. Okay. So, Jim, you have anything else to add while we wait for some more hands to raise here?
Sure. There is a clause in the trust that allows for presidents, vice presidents, secretaries, treasurers. So you can actually be the trustee, and then you can hire a team to come in and micromanage or macromanage the business of the trust. So there are times when you want to use a different title. I happen to be the president of one of my trusts, along with being the trustee. And it depends on who I'm talking to is the title I use. Because sometimes I don't want to raise suspicions. So I'll just say, well, I'm just president of the operation. And I don't say I'm the trustee. Then, okay, there's maybe a red flag. They want to know more about what it is, so on and so forth. Especially when you're talking to a government agency. So that's just a little comment that I had to add.
Yeah, and that makes a great deal of sense. Because, like, as you say, depending on who you're talking with, a lot of people, even people in business, aren't necessarily familiar with the actions of a trust or a trustee. If you tell them, you know, I'm president of ABC Management or whatever it is you've chosen to call your trust, they'll follow that. They won't have a problem with it because they understand president, vice president, secretary, et cetera. Whereas trustee, as Jim said, might raise a few flags.
Yeah, as in the past.
Yes. Any other questions here? We're only half an hour through this call, folks. Come on.
Well, we have other things we can chat about. We're going to have a bunch of questions, and that is more about the operation of the trust. I mean, everybody is trying to – not everybody, let me rephrase that. There are people that are trying to make this more difficult than it is, and I did that when I first got involved in this, and I was learning this stuff back in the late 70s, early 80s. I thought it had to be so formalized, and after I got playing with it, this is, you know, private. I do any way I want, but I also have to look and say, okay, if I ever get drug into court for any reason, that's the one you have to worry about. So I always did all of my minutes and all of my documentation accordingly, but it was still private. Nobody ever saw them. But it is a good record for the successors. For those of you who don't know, I've lost two of my closest friends this year, in the last 6 months, and I was successor trustee on both of them. Fortunately, we had some pretty good records, and I've been able to administer their trust according to their wishes. And the only thing I can say about it is John didn't do a great job on this stuff. He didn't have everything signed, but we figured out how to work around that because it was in the trust, but some things weren't signed on his triple play, but we worked around that. And it's very important when a successor steps in to be able to read the trust in the minutes and figure out what they were trying to accomplish. Fortunately for me, we were able to do that. So we've had a personal experience in our group with that just this last 6 months. So that's kind of why we're pushing this a little harder than we used to.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we do have a few questions here, Jim. So Let's go back to Danny. Danny.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay. So I like that business about referencing myself as the president rather than the trustee to a party, a business party or something to that effect. In your minutes, would you reference yourself as trustee or president, or does it matter?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to is how it matters. If you're talking to the government, you want to be as trustee because you have 100% control. Remember that, well, don't remember because you don't know, but the president has limited capabilities, because the trustee is the hammer, so to speak.
Okay.
The person makes the decision. So the president is the person who runs the day-to-day operations and meets with
sure.
the contractors and so on and so forth, with the executive trustee or the trustees manage the corpus of the trust, the asset itself, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. But I would say, he's asking about writing minutes, so I would still sign the minute as trustee, wouldn't you?
Oh yes, I'm sorry, I just misunderstood. Yeah. I could barely hear him. Yeah, I always sign as trustee.
The minute as trustee. Sign any contracts as president, again, acting as president and not as otherwise.
Okay, that makes sense. This kind of ferrets this, representation so that it works. And
yeah.
That's good. One other question is, having a successor trustee who's kind of, well, doesn't know about what's involved, is there a way that they can become educated with content maybe that's on the website, or is there a way of sharing, or how would you help your successor trustee to understand what's involved?
Give them access to the website.
I see. Okay.
All right. Okay. Okay, Rob, you're up.
Carol and Jim.
Hi.
Yes. Hi. You mentioned about the kids, your kids, putting a separate trust, you know, for them and you, or each one of them, and you being the executive trustee.
Yes.
And therefore they can't make any decisions without myself.
That's correct.
Okay.
In the trust, I mean, everybody has to come to the same decision. You can't say, well, I want to do this, and your wife's going to say, well, I don't want to do that. If she says you don't want to do that, you're not going to do it, like most households.
mm-hmm.
But naming yourself as executive trustee, you can act for and on behalf of your kid, but he can't do anything without you.
Ah, okay. So I could put in $1 million for my son and $1 million for my daughter, and then they would have to communicate and get the okay to do whatever they want to do with that.
Yeah, you would have to talk about it. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, good. Oh, okay. All right. I do have another question.
Sure.
And that is... I'm assuming that, well, first of all, is I got a hold of Shipping Plus and the Box Shop and talked to both of them. I don't know if they contacted you at all, but I did get a hold of Brooke, the
yeah.
owner of the Box Shop, and explained about... how she's offering just one box for one trust. And, you know, I told her about Shipping Plus. We'll do up to five for one box for the same price. And she said that she would honor that.
Okay.
So,
well, I got that email from you. And I spoke with her 3 or 4 months ago, and she did not make that offer then. That's why I haven't continued to send new people to her.
Right, and she was confused, and she was a little upset. You know, I could tell her voice and everything like that. I said, well, why don't you call Carol and, you know, explain it, and or Jim, and go from there and see what, you know, what you guys can work out, and if you will honor the same as Shipping Plus. Because I'm with the Box Shop, and I would... rather stay there rather than fill out all the other forms
yeah.
and so on and do all that. Unless there's some advantage if to going to Shipping Plus if it's the same price.
Well,
so,
I'll give her a call. I'll give her a call this week. Talk to her.
Yeah, that'd be good because maybe smooth things out a little bit and maybe we can work with her or both companies for the same price.
Right.
So.
Well, I'm sure we can. She's indicated to me in the past that she would do it. I've talked to her one other time. So I'll just get it formalized to send her a little information. That way we'll have it in black and white, what she'll offer for just the Narians, as we call ourselves. I'll
yeah.
get that squared away. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
And Jim, yeah, and you helped me with this, and you had mentioned, well, just ask her if she'll honor it.
She will.
And she did. I presented it like that. She says, well, okay, if the other person's doing the same. And I said, I haven't received any mail, and I've been with you for a year, and I haven't received one piece of mail. So, you know, you're doing quite well.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything for me, and you're collecting
exactly.
all the money. So, well, and I think she started to realize that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that I brought that up to her. I said, look, you know, this is just a cash cow for you. All you got to do is agree to do five, because we have it right now in you know, I'm in Vancouver, Washington, my place there, and they give us five. There's no problem.
Yeah. Right.
And all you have to do is notify them that you know, when you add a trust, the way I've set it up with mine, I just simply send them an email saying I've just added this to my list of trusts. So if the trust, something comes in by that trust name, it's always going to be addressed to the trust. They'll know exactly what box it goes into. I give them a heads up and add it to their computer. So that's how it works. It'll work with, we'll get them all online. It's just a matter of letting them know that, hey, you know, your competition is kicking your butt. You're not doing anything that's great money, so you need to just work with us.
Right, and I didn't fully commit because my renewal is up somewhere around the middle of September. So I've got a few more weeks. So, but
we'll
she did set you up. So, great. Okay.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks, Rob.
Yeah.
Hey, Sandy, that's on your mind today.
Yes, I'm probably being really hard-headed about this, but I can't get it through this hard head about when this... when we go to the bank, and this is RV, we have our mother load, and yet I want to go and buy a brand new home and a brand new car. How am I going to fund that?
The mother load is going to create and fund a real estate trust and a vehicle trust. So you're not going to do it at the time of your exchange. I don't think you're going to have that much time, but you're probably going to be at the bank the next day or the day after. And at that time, you're going to say, okay, Mr. Banker, I would like to move X million of dollars from my mother load trust and have it into an account for this trust. I would also like to move $150,000 from my mother load trust to this trust. And so the vehicle trust can then buy the car free and clear. The real estate trust can buy the house free and clear.
Okay. And at that point, I will call Carol and say, Carol, can you create me another trust for these?
At the very least, what we can do initially is get your abstracts. When this happens, Jim and I are both going to be taking a couple of weeks off. So if people are going to want to call us a couple of days after their exchange and want this, that, and the other, we're going to be taking some time off also. So, go ahead, Jim.
We will have our new website up. In fact, it's up now, and we can go ahead and take your applications, and as soon as we get back, we can start processing. So we're going to talk about that at the end, but don't think that we're going to be completely walking away from everybody for a couple weeks. We will have the availability for you to place your order, so to speak, for what you need. That's what we're going to talk about here in a few minutes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Okay. Margie, I haven't heard from you for a while. How are you doing?
Good. This is Margie. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I have questions, but I'd like to ask them offline. I mean, off the call. Later.
Okay, why don't you give me a call later, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tracy, what's up with you today?
Hello. Carol,
hi, Tracy.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
I had a question about how to operate the trust internationally. I know in the previous call, Jim mentioned something about offshore trust accounts or mother load accounts.
Jim, why don't you take that one?
Okay, yeah. If you're operating in a common law country, and most of the Latin American countries are, and other countries around the world all our common law, England, Ireland, Scotland, you can operate just like you can here. You just do the same thing, and then you can open bank accounts there. Now, there's a way of doing it where you can register. I know it's a bad word, but it has to be used. You can register your trust in certain areas, even though it's domiciled in America, and they will allow you to continue business there as a trust. It depends on the country. You're going to want some international accounts eventually, and that's something we may talk about in the future. We're not in that business anymore. We both of us used to do it, but the domiciles that I was using was the Bahamas, and, of course, they got scared off by the Internal Revenue Service with their CARICOM Act, and so they shut us down. We had an office there on Frederick Street, and John and I operated down there for 4 or 5 years, and right now I'm looking at, I don't think I'll be doing more business in Hong Kong. I had an associate office there for a while. But possibly we'll start doing some more business in British Virgin Islands. Possibly. Don't hold me to that.
Okay, so did you say you were going to do business in Hong Kong or not?
No, I am not. Not now. Not with what's going on.
Okay, got it. Okay.
It's getting crazy down there.
I know. Yeah. I know. Okay, that was my question. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Tracy. Well, Jim, you touched on that subject. You want to add more to it?
Sure. I touched on it. I'm going to change the subject a little bit.
Yeah.
First off, I want to encourage everybody to read the trust 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. It's only 10 pages long. So we were talking about presidents, vice presidents, secretary of treasury. If you go to Section 3, number L, it says the trustees may, at their discretion, elect from among the number, their number, a president, vice president, secretary, or treasurer, and or any other officers deemed expedient. Any trustee may hold 2 or more offices simultaneously, their duties being those such as are customary or as prescribed by the board. They may employ agents, executives, and other employees or designate third person to perform services or to hold funds for special purposes. So anything that you really think you want to do, trust me, there's a way to do it. This trust is phenomenal. So just read it, internalize it, and it'll take, that'll probably take care of about 75% of your questions, you know, as you're operating the trust, not questions now, but operating the trust. They're in there. They tell you what you can do. Doesn't say many things about what you can't do. Gives you a lot of leeway here. Mm-hmm. So read that thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, we've got one more. Ona, how are you doing today?
I'm good. You know, I have a reverb.
Are you on speaker or are you coming out really, really loud?
You know what? I have 2 things on my computer, and let me try and get
listening to us and talking to us is feeding back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to get rid of the computer so that I ask a question.
That's better.
Computer.
Nope.
It won't go off. Okay, can you hear me better now?
Yes, it's perfect. Thank you.
Okay. What I was trying to find out, for the exchange, all we need to take is the abstract for the from the trust, right?
That is my belief, yes. I would have your whole trust binder in a briefcase, just
right.
On the rare chance that they may ask for it, but I would not offer it. Just have it there if they ask for it. But all you're going to need is your abstract. They're not going to have time to look at everybody's trust.
Right, okay. All right, then. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Okey-dokey.
Yeah. Anything else, Una? Oh, she's gone. Okay, Jim. Anything else you'd like to add?
I can't think of anything. I just encourage everybody to read the document thoroughly 2 or 3 times. I haven't heard anything new today on what's going on. We are hearing a lot of really, really positive things. But again, that's really not our bailiwick. Our bailiwick is what we're talking about here, but we're all hoping this thing happens soon.
Yes, really.
I'm so tired of
waiting. Tired of waiting, really. You want to give them your contact information?
Sure. My name is Jim Knox. I live in Salem, Oregon, and I'm on West Coast time. I don't like to take calls before 9 o'clock in the morning. And I don't like to talk after about 6 or 7 in the evenings. I certainly don't like to talk too much on the weekends. because I do work weekends. I'm busy trying to do my catch-up. So you can get hold of me at security@indicatorinformation.com, or you can call me at 503-583-6791, and I will take your call.
Okay. Well, we've given you all a great deal of information today, and we do look forward to our next meeting, which the second Saturday of September is 3 weeks from today and not two. In the event we do RV soon, please remember that both Jim and I will be taking some time off to handle our own business. But as Jim said, you know, we will have the website up and running. You can put an application in. We're not going to be available to do a whole lot of business, but we're not shutting you off completely. Let's put it that way.
Well, do we want to talk about the website real quick? Do we want to let them know where it's at?
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead.
It's not 100% done, but it's done enough for you to get started with us. And it's at the number 3, letter I, the word trust, and then the word app, APP. So it's 3I, stands for Indicator Information Institute, 3itrustapp.com. 3itrustapp.com. Now, that's just to take the applications. It's not a website where all the information's at. You'll see all of the things we're doing there. There's a couple things we're still working on. But right now, we can take an app on that site. So if you're interested in increasing your portfolio with another trust, give that a shot. Now, what that does is ask a lot of questions, and it makes it a lot easier on us. And the reason we put this together is because there's so many times we can't hardly read some people's handwriting. No offense, but it's very difficult. And we make a lot of errors because we can't read things. So this is supposed to take care of that.
Okay. Looks like Rob has another question before we sign off. Rob?
Yeah, Carol and Jim, when this does IRP, hopefully soon, would you be I know you said, and you definitely 100% deserve time off, but I was just kind of curious if you would have a conference call to say, you know, explain, okay, you know, we went in and this is what happened. If you, you know, if you're allowed to share it, this is what to expect, and just, you know, be able to guide us through.
If we are allowed to share it, yes, we certainly will. We are allowed.
Oh. Okay.
We'll blast out an email if we're allowed right away and let people know what we've done, what we've got, what we've heard, what we've experienced. We'll have a conference call on that for sure.
Oh, excellent, excellent. And I know we're all anxious, and I want this thing to go, you know, soon, but, you know, I'm kind of looking, okay, well, the first of the year is just right around the corner. And would it be, and obviously it's not our choice, but would it be more beneficial for us that, say, it RV'd in January, and then we have a year and a half that we wouldn't have to pay taxes on all that? Because April 15th is not until 2021 if it happened in January.
I don't think it'd be a tax event anyway.
I agree. It's not supposed to be a taxable event.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, if we take money out, in other words, if it happens now, tomorrow, this month, then we're going to have to pay taxes on this this coming April 15th.
No.
Whereas if it was in January, then we wouldn't have to pay for, you know, another year and a half.
It's not taxable.
But if he takes it out personally, trust it would.
Well,
yeah, you're going to get taxed on it. You're going to get taxed on it as soon as you take. I mean, I'm not saying you're going to get taxed on it at the exchange, but when you take it out for a salary or start using that money, you're going to be taxed on it. So
pay the tax. You're going to have enough tax write-offs. Don't worry about it.
You'll have enough write-offs.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay. All right. Because I know we're all tired of waiting. So, but I was just kind of thinking, well, geez, January 1st is not too far away.
Yeah, you can do it the way you want. Any way you want to structure your portfolio is fine. My opinion is I'm going to have enough write-offs, so I'm not going to worry about it.
Okay.
I agree.
Yeah, you know, you're going to have – if you, I'm not going to be taking very much of a salary. I mean, a couple grand a month maybe.
Okay.
Why would I
– Okay, you know. So in other words, okay, if it happened now and we took, you know, a low salary, say, and then come January of this coming year, we started taking out more money – what then we wouldn't get taxed on it until April 15th of 2021. Is that correct?
That's something you have to work out with your wealth manager, because they're going to set you up with all kinds of accounts and all kinds of structures that you don't even – it's not that we don't know what they are. We don't even suspect what they are. There's going to be some great things coming down the pike. I don't think you have to worry about the taxes, because the system's changing. For this whole thing to work the way it's supposed to, it has to change. I'm not worried about the taxes, because I think it's going to go to a consumption tax.
Consumption.
Yeah.
You read my mind. That's what I was going to say, consumption tax. So that would, so then what I just said is doesn't have.
Yeah, it becomes a moot point, because we're going to be paying a flat rate whenever you buy anything new. Now, there's a key word, anything new.
New.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to buy used houses and used cars.
Right, and supposedly salaries are not going to be taxable either.
Right.
Wow. Anything new. So if you're buying something old, you know, an old car, that's not taxable?
That's right.
Yeah, as far as we know. But remember now.
Wow, okay, cool.
Okay, well, we don't know for sure. We're just going by what we hear. So,
yeah, well, you guys know more than us, so.
Well,
I doubt it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Well, yes, you're doing, Carol and Jim, you're doing fabulous. You're doing.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that, Rob.
Yes. Thank you. Rob.
So bye-bye. Bye. All right. I guess that is about the end of our, that is the end of our questions. So let's go ahead and sign off. Thank you again for your attention. My name is Carol Worlius. And although all of you have my home phone number, I'm going to be discontinuing that soon. So my new number, please write this down, is 877-333-5018. It's 877-333-5018. My email is not going to change. It's still info@indicatorinformation.com. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. We do appreciate you. And go RV. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.